We're gonna play on and stand strong with Trollo and Dibs. Turn the game on, pump up the volume. It's time to play ball with Trollo and Dibs. Turn the game on.
Good morning and welcome to the championship rounds of Trollo and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game. Brad Evans, Yahoo Fantasy Sports fantasy expert extraordinaire, coming up in about 5 minutes to answer all of your questions. If you'd like to get in the queue, the number is 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. If it's busy, it's because we have billions of you, but we don't have billions of lines. As we clear through lines, more will open up and you can jump in. But the GOAT's coming up in about 5 minutes. You can also follow along on the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. Before we get to the GOAT, the Niners set to take on the Denver Broncos Sunday at Levi's Stadium. Denver's 6-6 on the year. I think they're 3-3 on the road. They're not dreadful. They're not great. They've been improving as of late. I don't intend to rhyme. I really don't.
But you are.
And that's brutal.
You're killing it right now.
It's brutal. But yesterday, some devastating news. Their leading receiver, Emmanuel Sanders, lost for the season. Slipped in practice, wrecked his Achilles. He's done. 98 targets, first on the team. 71 receptions, first on the team. 868 yards, 4 touchdowns. Both of those, first on the team. Same franchise that traded Demaryius Thomas to Houston just a few weeks back. Top receiver now for the Denver Broncos? Cortland Sutton. Rookie, second-round pick at SMU. Big opportunity for the Niners secondary this weekend, is it not?
Yes, it's a huge opportunity, and I think it is for Robert Saleh as well to scheme up a little bit more pressure because you're not going to be as vulnerable on the back end, you would figure, without Emmanuel Sanders. So memo to Saleh, and I know you're listening, you're among the billions, but go ahead and dial up some blitzes. Take some chances. I'm not going to be upset if you get burned because you bring extra pressure. Last week, we saw them playing the same cover three, and we know, Lo, I've learned certainly this year that when you play cover three and the offense goes with 4 vertical routes, you're left with a linebacker trying to cover a speedy slot receiver or a wide receiver, and we saw that. Malcolm Smith got burned, touchdown Seattle. Well, this week, you don't have to play as much cover three, in my opinion, because you don't have that many weapons to guard against. So bring some pressure. Make a play on defense, a forced fumble, a pick six. Take a chance when you're a 2-10 team.
Yeah, you do have to take some chances, and you got to dial up the blitz. You're playing against a team that wants to run the ball. They get bent some 2 back, and they go some 12 personnel, 2 tight ends. And it's one of those teams still to keep that fullback in there, and they want to run the ball downhill. You have an opportunity now that you don't have a number one receiver. You got guys that are backups. You got guys that are rookies that you got to see how smart they are. You got to make sure that you put them in uncomfortable situations and see if the quarterback's going to side adjust and see if the players can side adjust, meaning that you got to make sure you're bringing someone down in the box and you're saying, okay, now we're going to bring a corner cat, and I know now that's receiver, he's going to have to side adjust. So find out, are they buttoned up? Find out that the coach did a great job in seeing if these receivers are going to break off their routes. One of the hardest routes to throw is an out route. So what do? You make sure if you are going to bring that coverage and you're playing single-eye safety or you're playing too deep and you bring a guy down in the box, he's going to make sure he takes away the inside and understand, make him beat it outside, make him throw that hard out route. So you're looking at certain dynamics of this game and saying, how do we bring pressure? How do we make sure that we get them in third and long where we can bring the house and make sure that the quarterback doesn't have to have time to hold a ball? Wouldn't sit and play cover zero, no safeties deep, because that's when you're asked. For a desire of getting guys burnt a lot. So it doesn't necessarily cover zero. Middle of the field is always open on cover zero. So if you get beat inside, then it's a wrap. So definitely play some single high. Definitely bring some blitzes. And definitely get them in third and long and make them one-dimensional.
Coming into this week, the Broncos ranked 23rd in pass offense at 233 yards per game and 17th in scoring at 23 points per game. Not saying the Niners should win. They're small underdogs in the 4-point department. But the reality is, you've got Richard Sherman, and you've got a bunch of other corners who are younger, unproven, battling injury, what have you. We've heard it all season long. Well, Akello Witherspoon's a third-round guy. He just needs some time. Okay, I can buy into that. I'm not in any rush. This team's a rebuild. That's fine. But this weekend, you're going up against one of the weakest wide receiver units in the NFL. Fact. That's what that is. It's a fact. Demaryius Thomas has been traded. Emmanuel Sanders is down for the year. If a rookie second-rounder is your top guy, and you just picked up Andre Holmes, former Oakland Raider, off waivers yesterday, as the replacement, the corresponding roster move for Sanders going to IR, that's not exactly an explosive unit, in my opinion. At the very least, it's not a proven unit, in my opinion. So this is where the corners on the Niner roster outside of Sherman have to look good. And if you can't look good in this matchup, I don't have much confidence that you're going to look good down the road against the Rams. I don't have much confidence you're going to look good down the road against Russell Wilson, who is playing at a freak show level right now. I don't have that much confidence that you're going to play well against Josh Rosen and the Cardinals as he continues to develop. These are the games where the unproven guys, the younger guys, they got to step up. They got to make some plays. They got to look competent. Because if you can do it here, then we can ask you to do it in a bigger game down the road. But if you can't do it here, how are you going to do it when it matters, right? How are you going to do it when it matters? What's Cooking with Fantasy Football is brought to you by Friedman's Appliance, a trusted name in the Bay Area since 1922. Ladies and gentlemen, fantasy expert for Yahoo Fantasy Sports, the absolute best in the business, Brad Evans, joining us here on 95.7 The Game. GOAT, Tennessee and Jacksonville, give me the tequila meter for this one.
Oh, God, it's off the charts. If it's a 1 to 10 scale, it's like 100. I mean, you're going to just go to the Costco and buy multiple bottles of your favorite adult beverage and just chug it, because that's the only way you're going to survive this game. And if you black out, you're not going to miss anything important.
That was incredible. And the translation for you Californians was Costco. When he says Casco, that was just good old-fashioned Midwestern goodness.
That's right.
Dan Dibley here, Nostra Diblis. I've got a choice between Spencer Ware and Jalen Richard at running back. Which direction do I go?
Well, look, I'm not really particularly high on Spencer Ware this week. He had a very tepid performance last week against those rancid Raiders. 15 combined touches, 52 total yards. Did find the end zone, though. It was a struggle for him to cross the chalk in that one. Intimidating matchup on paper going against the Baltimore Ravens. Allowed the fewest fantasy points, 90.3 total yards per game, 3.44 yards per carry to the RB position. But are you really going to trust a Raider? Really? I understand it's Kansas City, and Richard maybe get you 5-6 catches, but a lot of those receptions are going to be for empty yardage. So I would stick with Ware, unless you can, you know, comb the waiver wire and find that hidden gem.
All right, Goat's got your back. Light him up. 888-957-9570. Our one request, keep it relatively tight. We want to go rapid fire and get as many of you in here as we can. We begin with Alex in San Francisco. Alex in San Francisco, welcome to the show. You're on with the Goat. Fire away.
Hey, what's up? Andrew Luck or Lamar Jackson?
Well, you know, Lamar Jackson has delivered at all fronts fantasy-wise. It's a case of ugly is beautiful, statistically speaking. He's been missing wide-open throws down the field. But because of that scoring duality, he's been able to raise the floor. However, to go back to Andrew Luck. Look, I understand he opened up an Einstein Bagels shop, Brothers Bagel Shop last week. But up to that point, he had 8 consecutive games of 3 touchdowns or more. And I think he's got to get back to that delivery. You know, the last time he faced the Houston Texans was over 400 yards, 4 passing touchdowns. It was eons ago back in week 4. I don't expect that spectacular of a performance, but could it be like 250 and 3 scores? Absolutely. So give me Andrew Luck in the rematch against the Texans over Lamar Jackson in a game in which he's probably going to be playing from behind it.
The end zone in Oakland. The end zone, you're on with the GOAT. Fire away.
I got Josh Gordon in my wide receiver 2 spot. I got DJ Moore in my flex spot. Should I go with Tevin Coleman or Marlon Mack in the flex spot, or just leave it as is? Thanks, John.
Stick with whatever you got there, brother, and Josh Gordon and DJ Moore. I mean, and Tevin Coleman is, he's just been a yawn, a snore fest. He hasn't really delivered on the fantasy front. And I'm going to tell you right now, guys, I think Aaron Rodgers, now that Mike McCarthy met the cheese grater up there in northern Wisconsin, I think he is going to unleash hell this week on the Atlanta Falcons. I know Joe Philbin admitted that he hasn't called a play since his days at Northeastern. That was 2 decades ago. But really, the offensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers is Aaron Rodgers. So I don't want Coleman. I don't want the other option he got there. I think your 2 best plays are Josh Gordon and DJ Moore.
Go, would you lay the 5 with Green Bay?
Hells to the yes.
Yeah, I like him at 6-point teasers, too.
I think it's going to be probably a 10-plus point victory. Because they're actually going to utilize Aaron Jones properly. You realize that Aaron Jones last week played 1 more snap than Jamal Williams? Insanity! That's why Mike McCarthy, you're unemployed, you boob.
Brad Evans, Yahoo Fantasy Sports, with us here on 95.7 The Game. Back to the phones we go. Tyler in Patterson. Tyler, welcome to the show. Fire away.
Hey, Goat. So, flex option, who should I start? Adrian Peterson or Julian Edelman?
Adrian Peterson or Julian Edelman? Well, here's my concern with Adrian Peterson, a dude named Mark Sanchez. So Peterson's probably going to see nothing but stack fronts, eight or more men in the box this week. Now, granted, the Giants couldn't tackle a toddler right now. You know, since they traded away Snacks Harrison, given up close to 5 yards per carry, the running back position. But you got to bank on Peterson lumbering, you know, for another long touchdown like he did last week. I don't know if that's necessarily going to be in the cards, but I do prefer him over your second option there. So I think you got to run with the elder statesman at the running back position and hope for the best.
Philip in San Jose. Philip, welcome to the show. You're on with the GOAT. Fire away.
GOAT, two-part question. I've got Deshaun Watson or Mitchell Trubisky for quarterback. Mm. Or for my flex spot, should I do Josh J. Reynolds from L.A. Rams or T. Yeldon from Jacksonville? Thank you.
Total junk. Yeldon is never the answer, even in a premium matchup against the Tennessee Titans. So no, I go with Josh Reynolds on Monday night, and I'm going to go with Mitchell Trubisky. Slight advantage over Deshaun Watson. Trubisky practicing this week. He is on track to return to action. QB7 on the season in terms of fantasy points per game. I know with Aqib Talib on the field, the Rams have given up just 6.6 pass yards per attempt to the position. But Trubisky is just getting it done. And I think the Bears are going to spring the upset. I got it for like 300 yards, 2 to 4 touchdowns. And he always raises the floor with 30 to 50 rushing yards.
I like that. I was just going to follow up there. It's Sunday Night Football at Soldier. The Bears catching 3 at home. You like him to win that game?
Yeah, and look, this is not me viewing the game through orange or navy blue colored glasses. I think this game has got trap written all over it for the LA Rams. It's supposed to be in the upper 20s. There should be a significant breeze blowing off the lake on Monday night. That is a SoCal warm weather team. Jared Goff gets swarmed under by Khalil Mack and company. The Bears secondary has played really good football here of late.
Steve, Union City. Steve, thank you for the phone call. You're on with the GOAT. Fire away.
The GOAT, what's happening?
What up?
It's not a conversation. Fire away.
Hey, Ben in Oakland or Mahomes at home against Kansas City?
Obviously the matchup sides with Roethlisberger against the Raiders, but it is road Big Ben. You never know what version's going to show up. I'm going to chase the higher ceiling here, and I think the higher ceiling belongs to Patrick Mahomes. I know it's a difficult matchup on paper as the Ravens rank inside the top three and fewest fantasy points allotted to the quarterback position. They've given up right around 6.5 pass yards per attempt to opposing signal callers, but Mahomes is matchup proof, man. He is money in the bank. Forget Showtime, what ESPN, you know, forces down your throat with nicknames. It should be Money Mahomes. That is the appropriate nickname because he's going to make you those $100 bills and advance you on around two in your fantasy playoffs. 300-plus, multiple touchdowns. Bank on it. Play him.
Zachary, San Jose. Zachary, thanks for the phone call. You're on with the GOAT. Fire away.
You already answered my question with Deshaun Watson or Andrew Luck, but I guess you can go with the flex. I have Spencer Ware or Deion Lewis.
Oh, God. Drink. Man, if it's a PPR or half-point PPR, I go with Deion Lewis. I've got him projected for just 59 total yards tonight. You don't want anybody in this game unless you have Leonard Fournette. He's the only player that is trustworthy. Nobody else is. If it's a standard league, hope and pray that Spencer Ware trips and falls in the end zone.
Anthony in San Francisco, you're on with Brad Evans from Yahoo Fantasy Sports. Anthony, fire away.
Yeah, I had Emmanuel Sanders, man. Should I replace him with Mike Williams, Dante Pettis, or Zay Jones?
All excellent alternatives for you. I actually go with the hottest hand there, and that is Dante Pettis. Again, going against those Denver Broncos. I like the matchup. No Chris Harris Jr. I think you're going to see Pettis really take advantage, working primarily out of the slot in this game. A guy that is scorching right now with the 9 receptions, 203 yards, 3 touchdowns the last couple of weeks on 14 targets. Seeing a lot of premium coverages with defenses keying on George Kittle. And again, with that banged up secondary at Denver, it's an advantageous position for the rookie who is a savvy route runner, really finding those soft spots in coverage.
Last one, Ferris in San Francisco. Ferris, you're on with Brad Evans from Yahoo Fantasy Sports. Fire away.
Hey, guys. I have a 10-team standard, flex spot open, Isaiah Crowell or Justin Jackson. Thank you.
Oh, Justin Jackson, all diggity day long. Look, Melvin Gordon says he is feeling a lot better. His words, not mine, but he has yet to practice. I think it's probably a 20 to 25% chance that he returns, and that's at best. Justin Jackson looked like the all-time leading rusher at Northwestern that I saw last week in that fourth quarter drive, slithering through holes, driving through initial contact, showing off the hands as well in the pass game. You're going to see him outplay Austin Ekeler again this week. And it's Cincinnati, the worst defense in the NFL. They've got the most fantasy points, the running back position. I think Jackson goes hog wild in this one, at least 90 yards and a touchdown, starting with the utmost confidence.
Fantasy expert for Yahoo Fantasy Sports. He is the best in the business. You can follow him on Twitter at Yahoo Noise. Brad Evans with us here on 95.7 The Game. Always a pleasure, GOAT. Enjoy your Tequila Thursday.
Give Aaron Jones carries, you dumb Packers. I'm out.
Oh, man. Interesting theory, though. Have you ever been on a team in New Orleans? Jim Mora left in the middle of the season.
Walked you guys off, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Was that the only time a coach was fired or left during a season for you? Or were you ever on a team that fired the coach partway through the season?
Yeah, I was on another team in the Dirty Natty.
The Dirty Natty. 2-14, right?
Yeah, yeah. We had the Black Knight, Kelly Smith. And they fired a coach there. And then we the interim was Old Dick. Love Old Dick. You know
Dick
that.
LeBeau.
Absolutely.
How did you respond the first week? How did the team play the first week after firing the coach?
We got motorboated, both of them.
Were you even motivated to play?
Well, neither of them?
Did you
care? Yeah. You think, okay, the guy, you know.
I know you personally did. I'm just thinking like the team concept, because a lot of people feel that first game out after a firing, like in Green Bay, you're going to get a great effort. Everyone feels bad that someone got fired. Everyone wants to step up. On the other hand, some people feel now they're going to mail it in. So I'm curious, if you've been through it, what do you see? How do people respond?
I've seen different strokes for different folks. I've seen guys go out there and play hard for the coach, and we did. Just didn't have the talent. We didn't have an Aaron Rodgers, unfortunately. We had Black Knight, you know, so we didn't – Scott Mitchell. So we didn't have a guy that was capable of going for 400 or 500 yards in one game. So – It was tough, you know, to think that we could just change it around. With the Saints, we had Vic Fangio was our defensive coordinator, and we had
Fangio's been around.
Oh, he has. So we had, and then Vic was ended up being our interim coach, and he had such a profound story for us to get us ready to play and let it just simmer. When Moore walked out, he walked up on that stage, and actually, I was fired up. I thought we was no way we could lose this game the way that he talked about, you know, the Vikings, how they would come into their different places, and they would come in their ships, and after they found a land that they wanted to go and inhabit, they would burn their ships, so it was no way out. And he gave us that great story, and we got motorboated that next week, Joe. So
really?
So
all that, and still went out there and got boated.
Yeah, so... I've seen it work.
You haven't? You've laid out all these scenarios where it didn't work.
Well, he's seen it work, not firsthand.
I've heard about it working.
Yeah. Rumor has it can work.
Right. I have some friends who had it work.
I mean,
and it depends on the team, because you look at that Cincinnati team, and it doesn't matter if you would have brought in Curly Lambeau himself.
Right. Thank you.
You bring in the Gipper, you're still not going to be good enough to win. But to your point, I think you're kind of testing the waters here, Joe, to back up the GOAT's claim about Green Bay. Green Bay seems to be a team that's more put together and more able to bounce back and actually play better because they have the personnel.
Well, there's a lot of intrigue there. They're a 5-point favorite. Atlanta has been terrible this season.
Horrible, ferocious.
Atlanta's got a bad defense. They're coming up to Lambeau. No matter what, you got to figure it's going to be cold, right? So it's a dome team going to Lambeau in December. Rodgers, look, I'll be honest with you. Aaron Rodgers has a couple years of solid PR he needs to put together, because it's starting to move against him.
It is.
We went from, this guy could be the greatest of all time. We went from, he's just got bad coaching and bad ownership. They need to build around him. Everybody loved Aaron Rodgers. And then slowly but surely, story after story leaks out. You know, he's got a rift with his family. Okay, fine. That's fine. We can get behind that. Families, they fight. But then he's at war with McCarthy. And, you know, McCarthy gets fired. And then Winston Moss, the associate head coach, basically comes out and says, you know, it's great that he tweeted something about scheme and all this, but he said what they need is a head coach is going to come in and hold 12 and everyone else accountable, 12 being Aaron Rodgers, his jersey number. And they let him go. And they said it wasn't because of the tweet, but that's an assistant head coach that's been there a long time. and he's mentioning that they need to hold the quarterback accountable.
I agree.
There's something to that. The PR movement is working against Aaron Rodgers. And if he wants to solidify his place in history, he has got to come out over the next few weeks, and especially with this next head coach, and he's got to make it rain. Otherwise, he's just a malcontent. If the next coach comes in and it doesn't work, he's the problem.
Without a doubt.
Right now, it's McCarthy, but it's going to be him if it doesn't work with the next guy.
I don't know if it's necessarily McCarthy. I know everyone said certain things, but when you start to hear, you hear certain things. You never hear like Peyton Manning, rather. You never heard like a Drew Brees. Even with Phillip Rivers, you never hear these are bad teammates. Even with Tom Brady, you hear that he's so tough on guys. He's friggin' in their face.
But he's even tougher than on himself.
Right.
So that's why that works.
Exactly. And so my point is with A-Rod, here you got Aaron Rodgers, a situation where a coach lets that out. We got to be hard on 12. See, when you're given that type of levity and you're the man and you can sit there, him checking out of plays, saying Aaron Rodgers has been calling the plays anyway. Aaron Rodgers has been doing it. And so when you do that, forget that. I got it. I'm checking out. And guys know that you're going to check out anyway and you're doing your own things. You're killing your coach. You're killing your coach. And guys understand, God, he's not listening to the coach. So the coach loses who he is because it's Aaron's team. Aaron wants to be involved in a lot of these things. Yeah, Aaron should be able to listen and talk to the coach, but Aaron shouldn't be making these decisions. You're still the player. You have to have a coach to come in, and that's why he's a coach, to lead you. And when you're checking out of certain things at certain situations, you shouldn't be able to do it, especially if you're going to really have the buy-in. So when Aaron did that, and he's talking about his coach, and he's doing that, and guys are able to see the leader doing this, doing all those other things around, other coaches seen the demise of what Aaron was doing. So that's why he comes out with even 12 got to buy in.
Right, right. Because if he's not buying in, then why would a young wide receiver, I mean, Devontae Adams obviously has bought in. He's having a monster year, but a player like that, a younger player, if you see the quarterback basically dismissing what the coach is saying, why would you as a younger player then want to side with the coach when the quarterback's the guy in the huddle? He's changing the play anyway. And so it's fascinating what was said by Moss about holding 12 accountable. And I think, Joe, you're right. He has to not only fix his PR, but he's got to be able to elevate his career to that top echelon to truly be considered among the all-time greats. Because he's got, the one Super Bowl, which is notable, and he's got unbelievable stats. We all think he's this great quarterback, but over the final three, four, five, however many years of his career, he needs to have one more good postseason push to a conference championship game or preferably a Super Bowl to really cement him as one of the all-time greats.
At the very least, he needs to finish this season strong, meaning no drama, because he can play. No drama. And then with the next coach, he's got to make it work. Because if there's tension with the next coach or there's a problem or that thing falls apart, history's going to view him very differently. That Super Bowl was 10 years ago. People are going to view him very, very differently. You know who people view very positively? Drew Brees. Why does Drew Brees get viewed more favorably than Peyton Manning was? Think about that.
Him and his coach, they're on the same page all the time, and they're buttoned up, and you don't see
it. Well, it's that, but remember, Drew's only got one Super Bowl. Peyton was killed for only having one Super Bowl. They killed him for years, and then even though he was washed at the end, he got the second one with Denver, and that was that. And no one says it anymore because, you know, we're past it and we like him. But Drew Brees never gets that heat, ever. Drew's only got one. If Peyton doesn't go on and take all that heat for having only the one Super Bowl, which so many people thought was a black mark on the resume, Drew Brees is in the crosshairs there. But yet, it doesn't happen. No one ever goes, well, Brees only won one. Everyone now is, Brees for MVP. Could he be the greatest of all time? Have we overlooked him? No, he was just nicely, quietly in the Manning shadow where Manning was taking the heat for only winning one. Not saying it's fair. Not saying I agree. Just making observations.
And you're right.
Like Galileo.
But you're right. And the biggest thing difference, Joe, is you had a dominant guy in the AFC in Tom Brady, and a dominant guy in the AFC, which is Peyton Manning. And you had these two, and it was like oil and water. They didn't mix. So everyone started going with Brady because
who's the oil?
Well, it had to be Brady because, you know, that's the goal.
Tell us, Galileo.
So when you're looking at Brady and what he was, that's the goal. Oil is like gold. I mean, you think about what oil is.
He who has
done.
The oil rules.
Absolutely. And so you think about the countries and what is oil doing? What is gas prices? What's going on? They're fighting all over the place. Is that a black gold? It's black gold. That's
Texas
what oil
tea.
Is.
It's Beverly Hillbillies, we learned that.
Absolutely. So when you think about that and think about the dynamics and you think about these two guys and how prolific of a quarterbacks they were, everyone sided with Brady because of the fact of what he's been able to do in his illustrious career. And you look at Peyton Manning. So he was the one who was taken more because he could never get past the great Tom Brady and the team and Belichick. But you had a guy in Peyton Manning was still prolific numbers and all the things that he was able to do. But everyone said, what happened? It wasn't that he wasn't just as good. It behooves us to look at the numbers. It wasn't that he wasn't as good. It wasn't that he wasn't a great quarterback. But just so happened he was playing against a team that had more weapons than him. And so what people keep
judging. That's enough. I don't know what this is about. I don't know where this is going.
I gave you the uptick signal like a minute
ago,
Coach.
You're laying out the same case for Drew Brees. He's running the juggernauts in the NFC. It's the same thing. It's just not one guy. There's plenty of competition. I don't know what that is.
Man.
I'm going to do my best in this
next break to forget that
2 minutes even happened.
No, you got to clean it up.
And we'll talk about something else here on 95.7.
I got one more thing to say.
The baseball hot stove is heating up. And we have a man on the inside, John Morosi, exclusively on our airwaves.
I just think that given the atmosphere, I think it is more likely than not that Bumgarner's wearing a different uniform by the start of spring training.
For all the breaking news, keep it locked on 95.7. The Game. Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
Dibs in the chair at the last possible second. Woo! Low, nowhere to be found.
Close.
Standard 95.7 The Game morning show. That's old Chucklehead. Here he comes, probably running that hot garbage out there with Guru.
So much.
Yeah, come on.
You have no idea.
Turn on the mic.
Wait for it.
Yourself.
Wait for the headphones.
Now late for the segment. Welcome back.
It's nice when that hits in stereo, doesn't it? Double up.
It's like I'm really there.
I held the door from he's over there running his mouth, Joe, talking about all this other nonsense.
False.
I'm a veteran.
I was having a man-to-man conversation with Guru. You knifed in, not unlike a certain former running back. And I simply said, excuse me, we were having an A and B conversation. Why don't you see yourself out?
Did you hear what he just did?
Yeah. That was OJ. It was a great reference.
Oh, my God. Oh, how could you do that?
You're too busy fixating on that. He was busy boating you with that uptick.
Yeah. It was a 10-8 round is what happened.
That was bad.
Joseph, I'm going to ask you a question, please.
Well, why'd you knife in on the Dibley Guru conversation? First of all, what was the conversation?
We were discussing Blue Chew and the...
is that what he... What did he ask me?
Again?
We were discussing the professional manner with which he delivers the reads, and I was complimenting him. We had a little brief back and forth.
Did he not ask me, Lo, how are you doing? What did he not? Did who came out to who? Did he come to me or I asked him?
You came in hard off my right shoulder like we were double teaming the nose tackle in an ace block. Okay, we were an ace block, and I was having a conversation. I didn't need your help in a two-man block.
Guru asked me a question. I did not interrupt.
And what was the question he asked you?
Lo, can I touch you? He's talking about Blue Chew.
It's only funny because it's true.
Thank you.
He's can I touch you?
Can I touch you like he wanted a fist bump or is it okay to touch? And that's what he said. That's how it happened. He's talking about Blue Chew, not in that. This is all a bad conversation. Mm-hmm.
No. This is really good. Please keep going.
What did he ask you? Lo, can I touch you?
You asked me, Joe, what he asked me.
That's hogwash.
That's on me.
And he said, can I touch you? And I was like,
what'd you say?
Of course you can. I'm okay.
So where did he touch you?
We fist bumped. That was it.
Their pinkies grazed each other, and we were on to Cincinnati.
Do you want me to ask you my question that I was going to ask you, Joe? It's a pretty good question.
How does LinkedIn work?
Oh, you're looking to post your resume?
I just want to make sure everything's fresh on there.
Wait a minute.
Indeed.com is a great place to go too, Coach. But anyway.
Ask Jeeves. Is that still around? Ask Jeeves.
I'll check.
Where can I get a radio job outside of this room?
That hurts me when you want to leave me like that.
And why? Because I'm looking directly at you when I say it?
Yes, you're looking at me. Why are you looking at Daniel?
I had to look at him for 2 days with you out.
Q102 is looking for a nighttime host, Joe. You got a chance on FM.
Joseph, the last 10 years, which quarterback in the NFC has been dominant?
In the last 10 years, which quarterback in the NFC has been dominant? Breeze. But you're looking for someone other than Breeze because you want to go back to the Brady Manning analogy. Your analogy is that Manning had an obstacle in his way, which is why he couldn't fulfill more success from the Super Bowl. Breeze has had plenty of obstacles in his way. The problem is that it hasn't just been one guy. He's had to go through Cam Newton, Titans had to go through Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz, Eli Manning had a couple of runs. You work your way around, Russell Wilson. It's the same thing. Your argument is not going to work. Manning had an obstacle in the AFC. He got by it sometimes. He didn't other times. Breeze had plenty of obstacles. My comment still holds. Manning took a ton of heat late in his career because he only won one Super Bowl, right? Because we're so ridiculous with the way we judge everybody and the way we rank everybody that because he only won one Super Bowl, he couldn't be that great. Yet Drew Brees has never had to face that heat. No one's ever said, well, Drew's only won the one Super Bowl. No, because Drew wasn't a number one pick coming out of Tennessee. Drew has always been in the underdog role. He was a second rounder out of Purdue. He was told he was too short. He went to San Diego. He had some success, but before he could really grow, they went out and drafted Phillip Rivers, or at least drafted Eli and then traded for Rivers. And then he felt pressure, and then they let him go, and then he had the injury, and then Miami passed, and he landed in New Orleans, and he had success, and he's just such a great story. No one ever thinks to criticize it. I'm not saying they should. I'm just saying two very similar careers. Manning and Breeze, as prolific offensively as any quarterbacks that have ever come around. Highly successful, highly intelligent, leaders of men, great teammates, but they've both won one Super Bowl. Manning took a ton of heat late for it because he should have won more. Breeze hasn't. So if we're going to talk about greatness, how come Breeze doesn't get that heat? Well, how come he gets to get past it and Manning didn't?
Who's one of the greatest players that I always talk about in the NBA? And everyone he gets in, and he would be winning. And always, the guys always say LeBron James. Why does he receive so much heat? Because who couldn't get past for the last 4 years that they've been playing? It's the Warriors. The Warriors is no different than Tom Brady. And I totally understand what you're saying, Joe, when you're saying Breeze went through the same thing. I differ in the fact that you're saying he went through, yes, there was a name of list that you gave me of different quarterbacks. The difference is when you look at what Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, he had one fixture. I get what you're saying. He had one fixture, one obstacle course that remained consistent. And that was, you know who that is, New England Patriots. And you look at what the NFC, my only point that I'm making is he doesn't receive as much because it's been so jumbled. It's so many guys. You see LeBron. LeBron James can't get past the Dubs. All these different things because it's one team. I just think that sometimes people were so nearsighted. We say, oh my God, he's not great because of that, or he's great because of this. I just sometimes think we miss it because we look at a fixture, the Dubs, a fixture, the New England Patriots, a fixture, and it's different than when it's a rotating scale. That's what I mean.
I would make the case that Manning's route to the Super Bowl during his career was easier than Breeze's route. That's what I would make, because he really only had to face one team, and then there was also kind of Pittsburgh. That's it. Who else was in the AFC? You weren't battling 15 other teams. There was Brady, of course. That's a tough one. And then there was Pittsburgh, who's been solid, respectable team for more than a decade. And then who else? No one. Kansas City can't win in the playoffs. The Chargers might get there, but they'll eventually shoot themselves in the foot. The Raiders have been nowhere to be found. Denver was only really anything serious when Manning joined them. The AFC South is a complete joke.
Baltimore flash in the pan, Miami, Buffalo,
but you're
right.
Jump on. No, he's not right, Dan. No,
16
he's not.
Teams, you only have
no,
to worry about one guy every year. Breeze has to worry about everyone.
I'm not letting you guys get off that easy. I'm back, and we're going to draw a line. With all due respect, let's draw a line, guys. Put on the gloves, and I'm ready to take both of you on.
Bring it.
Okay.
Because
here's the deal.
If I may offer up just a point in this conversation before you go Schlitz Malt Liquor Bowl and run through and break
Schlitz
up all
malt
the...
liquor. Okay, come on.
The NFC, Joe's point is there is a larger variety of teams who are competitive as opposed to the AFC at the time, where only two, maybe three teams you throw in Pittsburgh were obstacles to Peyton Manning. In the NFC, you had the Eli run, you had the Cam Newton rise, Colin Kaepernick even got the 49ers to the NFC Championship, to the Super Bowl as well. So the number of contenders far deeper in the NFC. I agree with Joe Fortenbaugh on this
point.
And
he's wrong. And here's Joe, and you know he's wrong. Pittsburgh Steelers, how many Super Bowls did they win? And you're talking about Baltimore. How long were they competitive? And you're talking about you can go more teams in AFC for those amount of time was more competitive than with NFC. You know exactly what I'm saying. You want to talk about, you're going to sit here and throw in Cam Newton and those guys? Child, please. Baltimore's been more consistent than Cam Newton. You want to pull up the numbers?
Yeah, but the reality is, Baltimore was a legitimate threat 1 year, and that was the year they won. Other than that, they would get in there and they'd make noise, but that'd be
it. What was the Cam Newton doing?
1 year. They were each 1 year. You could say Cam in Carolina and Baltimore are essentially the same thing.
Baltimore went to, if you look at Baltimore's run, you talk about their run, you look at their, how long were they more consistent? I think Baltimore's been more consistent.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And if you say Pittsburgh Steelers, Pittsburgh's been more consistent. When you think about the NFC, when you guys are talking about these numbers, I think that my numbers are going to support the AFC has had more teams with more consistency than the NFC.
Yes, but that's not the debate. No one's debating more consistency. We're debating obstacles, legitimate obstacles to a Super Bowl. During Manning's run in Indy, his legitimate obstacles to the Super Bowl, Brady, Pittsburgh, I'll throw that in there, and who else? Baltimore, 1 year. 1 year Baltimore was nasty. Very good and consistent, like you say, but they weren't a major obstacle. It's not like it was in his division. He didn't have to deal with them all that often. He had to deal with Brady every year. He pretty much had to deal with Pittsburgh every year, and that was it. That was it. Inside of Breeze's own division, there was the rise of Atlanta. Then they fell off. Not consistent, but he had to deal with that. He's had to deal with Carolina, who's been good 1 or 2 years. But again, just like Baltimore, Philadelphia got hot for a minute. Eli and the Giants had 2 runs. Aaron Rodgers has been around for more than 10 years. Seattle's had a 6-7 year run where they've been solid. Harbaugh and the Niners were good for 3 to 4 years. Arizona, Kurt Warner, he had to deal with that, and Larry Fitzgerald. Certainly not Detroit.
Not Minnesota. Not Minnesota at the time.
Minnesota with Brett Favre, though. That there you go. Drew Brees had to face them in the NFC Championship. There's like 1 year Minnesota was decent, but he's had to go through all that. That gauntlet, it's just the collection of talent, the good every year, there have been more obstacles. In the AFC, that's it. You had to worry about getting by Brady. And then there would be Pittsburgh, and that was it. Baltimore had 1 year. The AFC West produced nothing. Nothing of substance. What did the AFC West have during Manning's entire run? The Raiders were nowhere to be found for all of it. Denver, what, with Jake Plummer?
The Raiders in the Tuck game, and about the same time as the turn of the century, Baltimore had a few good teams, but that was it early on in Peyton.
All the way back before Drew Brees was even a part of this conversation.
Right?
The Chiefs can't win in the playoffs. We see what happens every time they get there. And then, who am I missing? San Diego. The Chargers, you were around. Chargers would be nasty, but you guys always shot yourselves in the foot. Except for Billy Volek. One could make the case Billy Volek was the most important Charger during the entire run.
Charger was a great team.
Not great. Good.
Not excellent.
I'll give you good.
It's a very good team.
I'll give you C+. As in C for Chargers, go Chargers go, plus. That's your cue if you're sleeping.
Go Chargers go.
I had it over here for you, Coach.
Steven's just over there.
The amount of money I lost betting on these jabronis. Oh, we'll handle the Jets.
Sorry, Joe. We'll let you down.
Who's the damn kicker from Iowa? Nate
Katie. Oh, my God.
Oh, Nate Katie.
That wasn't even a chip shot. That was shorter than an actual extra point.
Kickers can't live with him. Can't live without him.
So yeah.
Many a great run has been derailed by a kicker.
Yeah, let's relive those days. If the AFC was so tough, tell me about the obstacle you guys were in, Peyton Manning.
Let's move on. I just wanted to get that out there.
What would you like to talk about? We got some time left. You've been out 2 days. Is there anything you would like to visit upon?
I think, you know what?
We did some Heisman Trophy discussion very briefly. You can jump into that if you'd like.
A couple things are interesting to me. I just think that the Warriors this year, it's the difference between last year and this year. Last year, they said, okay, it's hard to be fired up for every game. I get that. This year, I just don't think teams really respect and fear the Warriors. It's just starting to kind of, is this old hat? I think things are starting to change.
Well, let's start with this. What makes you think that teams don't necessarily fear them anymore?
I think it was a part about the Warriors last year that everyone said, okay, they're going to turn it on. They're going to crank it up. This is the team. And now you start to watch them now this year, and I just feel that there's a different sense how the league views them. I think they've been the Mike Tyson of the NBA for a couple years, and now I think Buster Douglas and everyone else is saying, I can whoop you. And even though they have the more talent, even though they should be the better teams, I just don't feel it. I just don't feel that the rest of the league views them
Is there a specific reason or instance that's led you to believe that? Not saying you're wrong.
No.
I'm just curious what led you to this.
I think just the way that the games are going, I look at the way that they play in the middle, the center position, that piece has not been solidified. I see teams rebounding, and it just seems like it's a different dynamics for some particular reason this year. They just don't seem like they're just feared that they're just going to be a dominant team. I'm not just looking at this team now as, okay, they're dominant. They're going to turn it on. I'm like, wow, I feel a little different this year for some reason.
I think it's as much about other teams who have caught up to them as it is them regressing. I think maybe their play has leveled out. I don't necessarily think that they're getting better anymore. They've reached a level, and you'll see it tomorrow night when Milwaukee takes them on. Brogdon and Bledsoe in the backcourt are good. They're athletic. They can shoot the three. Giannis Antetokounmpo, we know, is the future of the NBA, longer players like that. Yeah. So I think it's as much the Mike Tyson effect of, wow, somebody got to Mike Tyson.
Right.
He's not so invincible anymore. But it's also, I think, other teams comprising their roster in a way that they can challenge him, whether it's Boston, Toronto, Milwaukee. Heck, Detroit was able to shoot the three and beat him. So I think it's both factors playing together.
That's it. People are challenging them differently. Maybe athletically, maybe they went out and said, okay, I'm getting the guys that I know that can compete against you. So maybe they're not afraid. And that's why I think that you're watching their games and you're like, they're not just head and shoulders above the competition anymore, in my opinion.
Don't worry, they will be. It'll be a boating come playoff time. What Buster Douglas moment? I see what you're saying, but what's the Buster Douglas moment?
I don't think it's so
Steph
much.
Steph was out 11 games. If we're going to say they're not Tyson anymore, there was a Buster Douglas moment. Well, what's the moment?
Well, it's not necessarily
losing in Toronto.
The fact that they lost six consecutive road games. That's something that had never happened in Steve Kerr era. You lost four consecutive games. That had never happened in the era. The fact that you saw for the first time a public spat between Draymond Green and Kevin Durant, that might be a self-knockout where instead of Buster hitting Tyson, it was Tyson hitting himself. But I think those sort of cracks that you've seen, plus the rule changes with the freedom of movement, that is hindering the Warriors to the extent that when you switch everything, you can't play as physically on the screen and you can't play as physically on the ball. So I think the freedom of movement has helped other teams more so than it's helped the Warriors.
You don't see the 10-8 rounds anymore by the Warrior teams as much. And
it's December. What do you want? How many points did they win by last night?
Were you not entertained? It was the Cavs, and I get that. Pump the brakes. It's the Cavs. Newsflash. You saw what happened when they played against, like Dibs talked about, they played against Detroit. You saw this team. You saw them in Toronto.
I forgot about that. That Detroit juggernauts. That loss is going to come back to really hurt them.
I don't know if
Detroit.
It's going to. I'm not saying
last time I saw Blake Griffin,
he got posterized.
He was looking up at Giannis Antetokounmpo, who pretty much ended his career.
Joe Anthony Slater just posted a piece on an oral history of the 24-0 start that was three seasons ago in the 2015-2016 season when Golden State started 24-0.
Yes.
To think about where they were at that point on their way to 73-9, where they truly looked unbeatable to now, not that they're all of a sudden not the favorites, because they are.
Not
that they're not the best team in the league, because they are. But I think the gap between the Warriors and the Pack has reduced, maybe not considerably, but it's reduced noticeably.
No, considerably.
Noticeably.
Right now, Dibs, even though you got Steph right now, and if I said, I wouldn't prison bet that they could beat Kawhi in a 7-game series right now, I would put my money. I'm not trying to be fanboy. I'm not trying to be a hater.
We're just having a conversation.
Yes, I really believe that right now Toronto would beat them in a 7-game series.
Come on,
mark the tape.
Today, I'm not talking about.
They played one game against him without Steph and without Draymond on the road.
Went to overtime too.
And it went to overtime.
They'll beat them when they come here.
Great.
Toronto will. I know, but you guys are saying that.
The league's caught up. Fine. I'll indulge this.
Okay.
I'll indulge this nonsense. Toronto and who else?
I think that you look.
No, I'm technically caught up. Toronto and who else?
I think Boston's a better team.
Boston looks good. I mean, as I checked, they're 13-10, winners of three straight. So they were 10-10 and they've won three straight. Scoring differential of 4.4. I'm shook. So I'll give you that. Shook. Boston looks outstanding. Who else is caught up? Boston is in sixth place in the East. Okay.
Yeah, I think that it has tightened up. I don't think that the Warriors is a dominant team that they used to be. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not sitting here saying that they're not the best team. I'm just saying if you watch the way that they're playing, teams now are playing them a lot tougher, and they're losing it up. They're losing more often than they were last year. It's just to me, in my opinion, right now. They still have to fix the big man situation. Hopefully Cousins
big man situation is not an issue.
He
will be back and he'll be fine. These are not issues. These are issues. You ever see that movie, Elysium, where Jodie Foster's living up in high society and Matt Damon is down in Earth's just a terrible place to live, and he gets injured and he has to get up there.
Yeah,
the Warriors are Elysium, but the rest of the NBA is planet Earth. Disgusting.
If they don't get this rebounding situation, I'm telling you, it will affect them.
But I'm asking you, who's going to get them? Who's going to be able to take advantage of that weak spot? I'll indulge that there's a weak spot there, sure. Who's going to take advantage of that? Is it Denver? Denver's 17-7. They're looking good. They can rebound. They got bigs. Is it Oklahoma City? They're 16-7. We've seen that one before.
And the Clippers are the new look Clippers. They're a formidable team as well.
They're unstoppable, the Clippers.
I would say it's
16-8.
It's Toronto and Boston are the two teams who, in my opinion, still are the most threatening.
So you don't have to worry about one of them because you can't get both of them out of the East.
Correct. Correct.
So we've got one team we're concerned with, and it's a team from Canada.
Yeah, and we've been over
this. Think about that for a second.
And Lo, they play Wednesday night. And I think it's interesting, Joe, when you look at the next five games. You've got the next five. You've got Minnesota after the Milwaukee game, of course, tomorrow. You've got Minnesota, Toronto at home, at Sacramento, and then Memphis, and then at Utah. I think over the course of these next six games, starting with tomorrow, you're either going to have these fears alleviated or they're going to be intensified. If they go 3-3 over the next six against those opponents, I think that we'll all be looking at it a little bit differently because Draymond will be back once the homestand comes. And 3-3 is pretty ordinary. And if you go against that competition, Milwaukee's good. We already talked about Toronto. Sacramento's a team on the rise. And then you've got a trip to Utah, which is never easy. I think anything 3-3 or worse will be cause for concern.
Yeah, I think
other teams that scare me. Dallas, 12-11.
No.
Dallas, they're scary to me.
No.
Now that you guys have laid this out. Oklahoma. Scared of Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Got to look out for Phoenix. They're 4-20. But they're a sleeping giant.
DeAndre Ayton looks good Phoenix. Early on offense.
If you guys don't think the Oklahoma is for real, I don't know what you've been smoking.
They're good.
Oklahoma got big guy in the middle that can handle what we have, and they got two guys that can score. I think Oklahoma is a team that you can't just sit there and just say it's a foregone conclusion in a seven-game series. They got something. Denver's another team you look at, okay, where are they going to be? The Clippers got a new team. They're spreading the ball. Yeah, they don't have necessarily superstars, but now they're going out and they have a remedy, and they've been able to compete, and they've been able to beat Golden State. You'll be crazy not to look at the Lakers. You see Kuzma starting to play a lot better. This guy's starting to get wound up. They got two guys in the bigs. They got some bigs now that they can defend and get rebounds. Rebound is going to be a premium for this team. I really believe, because if you're going to live by that three, and that's what this Warrior team is going to do, you better make sure that you got guys like last year that could get rebounds and give you second shot chance and also can defend the lane. And right now, hopefully get Draymond back, because he's a guy that you know his defensive prowess. But right now, you don't have necessarily a staple, a guy that can defend the lane, and no one's necessarily afraid about it.
Portland's another team that worries me. They're 3-7 in their last 10. So you got to watch out.
Like
now, granted, they got swept out of the playoffs last year as a three seed, but I'm still worried about them.
Keep your eyes on them.
Pelicans 13-13. Anthony Davis got hurt last night, but still very dangerous because they can rebound. Let's see here. Houston, we all know they're a threat at 11-12.
Big time. Big time.
Made a mistake letting Carmelo Anthony get away from him, but still a threat.
He's still out there, though. They can bring him back in, I'm sure.
Bulls are 5-20, but now that they made the coaching change, here they come. So watch out for Chicago.
Big bounce back when you get rid of the mayor like that. Freddie Hoiberg.
Knicks lost their last game out, but don't worry, they're only being outscored by 5.5 per game. They're coming on.
And keep your eye on the Hawks. They played them tough for 2.5 quarters. Old Atlanta.
Well, haven't mentioned Memphis. I mean, Gasol, he's, 25, 26? He's in his prime.
I'm sorry, Joe, but we're all out of time.
Actually, we still have another 90 seconds.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Damon will ask Steve Kerr that today at 4 o'clock.
If only it wasn't your first day on the job. Did they say, yeah, he set you up?
Yeah.
You got a whole another minute here, Coach.
If only you could look at the screen that has the out time as 55:15.
What you should be doing right now is realizing that he bailed on your side of the equation and jumped ship to me because he didn't want to get boated like you were getting.
No. He corrupted my take.
He completely hung you out to
dry.
And you aren't even doing anything about it.
He hijacked my take and tried to corrupt it. No, there's no boating. I still be pointing out that the gap is getting smaller, and then he took it and ran with it. That was on him, not me.
Lowe versus Dibs, Jacksonville at Tennessee, the Titans 5.5-point favorites tonight. Who are you guys taking? I believe you won last week, but there's all this controversy.
There's no controversy.
Who do I go with first?
I'll go with Tennessee. It doesn't even matter to me who he wants to take. I'm on Tennessee. It's an easy pick.
All right,
cool. Then I'll go Jacksonville.
Cool, fine.
And now we are officially out of time. Steiny and the Guru coming up next. Takes, and more takes. I believe no guests today. Woo, that show's going to be hot. For Dibs and Lowe, I'm Joe. Thanks for hanging out with us today, everyone. Greatly appreciate it. As always, see you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. right here on 95.7 The Game.
They got something really special up there in Canada right now.